Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Welcome to Success Is, the podcast where we explore what success truly means and how to achieve it. I'm your host, Phil Portman, and I couldn't be more excited to dive into today's episode. Our guest today is Dominic Rubino, an entrepreneur, business coach, and podcast host with a wealth of knowledge and a knack for making complex tasks relatable. Dominic has built and scaled companies, coached countless business owners to success, and even delivered a TED Talk on using business strategies to strengthen family dynamics. As the host of Cabinet Maker Profit Systems podcast, Dominic has a passion for helping people achieve their goals, whether they're running a small shop or a multi-million dollar enterprise. Dominic, welcome to Success Is. We're thrilled to have you here.
Yeah, Phil, I'm so excited to be here with you as well.
So let's kick it off. What does success mean to you?
You know, I thought a lot about this since we had our first conversation. The answer to me is so simple. It's all about family for me. You know, I just want to be able to take my family to a restaurant and not worry about what they order by price. Just order what you want. That's success to me, just taking care of my family.
Absolutely. Yeah, I went through a similar, journey myself. And in my 20s, I was focused primarily on my professional life, often at the expense of my personal life. Yeah. And then I decided one day that I did not want my kids to grow up raised by a single mother, right? So balancing professional and personal life can be a little bit challenging, especially in our entrepreneurship world. How do you maintain that work-life balance, especially with a family?
I wish I could tell you I had it all figured out. It is a constant, it's a constant study for me. And I have to keep working at it. You know, I remember back to one of the most significant companies that I've sold. So I've built and sold a couple of companies. Some of them I just shut down because they didn't work at all. I've had failures too. But one of the big ones was I took a company from zero to 120 million in sales. And then I sold that company. And during the sales, because the sale doesn't happen overnight, during the sales process, my wife and I booked a trip to Italy. And when we got there, there was a document waiting for us at the hotel that I had to sign. It was like the final document to get paid on the sale. And so I signed it and sent it back. And that night we went for dinner. I'm like, I'm ordering whatever I want on this menu. And of course I ordered steak, which would be the same anyway. And I remember cutting into it, Phil, and tasting it. And I thought the very first thing I thought is, this meat doesn't taste any different than it ever did before. And it was such a grounding moment for me, was that I had, you know, I'd rung the bell, as people say. I did pretty good on that deal. Nothing changed. Nobody walked by me any different. You know, thankfully, I was still sitting across the table from a fantastic wife, but nothing changed, man. It was the same meat. Just same steak, you know, whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah. So yeah, I'm always interested in the habits of successful people. You know, you built companies from scratch and scaled them significantly. What daily rituals or habits have been crucial to your success?
You probably hear this a lot on your show, Phil, but I'll tell you, goal setting and then sticking to the goals has to be the most critical part of things. And, you know, for me, I like to write daily affirmations so that I remind myself. And I'm old school. You know, I was born in 68. When I say write my affirmations, I mean write out in longhand my affirmations. Because I find there's a connection between my hand and the pen and the feel of the paper and considering what I'm writing. And as soon as I write one of my affirmations on another page, I write, what do I need to do right now? And then I attack that list with absolute ferocity, I think is the only word. I go after my to-do list and I want to have it done as quickly as possible.
That's awesome. Yeah. Likewise, same thing. Daily affirmations, right? Are
so simple.
Incredibly important. Absolutely. Yeah.
If you don't mind me interrupting, the other one is I am a beast when it comes to my calendar. Like, I have a calendar. I use time blocking. Are you familiar with time blocking or block scheduling?
I don't know if you want to elaborate on it. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. So just imagine that you've got and I'm going to use paper again because we can all understand paper. I'm not going to talk about some specific software. There's thousands out there. But if you imagine that you print it off a week at a glance calendar, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and whatever time your day starts, whatever time your day ends, and then it's all broken into 1 hour blocks. It's just a grid. On that piece of paper, I'm going to block off the things that I need to do. Like every day at noon is lunch, and I get to the office every day at 7, and I leave every day at 5. Whatever those times are, right? Then I have my production meeting. I have my sales meeting. I've got my meeting with my office manager. All of those things are pre-booked on my calendar. Any of the leftover white space is the time that I can accept other meetings. And we can get fancier with that. And time management for entrepreneurs and business owners is really critical. But I start with that block schedule. And then I go and I use Google Calendar. Then I put it into Google Calendar and it comes to life. But unless I control my time, everybody else is going to try and control it for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, one of the things I found that was important with and similar to blocking the schedule is I block time to do nothing. I don't know if I'm the only one that does this.
I like that. It sounds like a great idea. I should do that.
But what I was finding is before I would go to bed, I'd have all these great ideas, or when I'm standing in the shower, I'm having all these great ideas, right? Well, there's so much stimulation going on through the day between work, schedule, meetings, podcasts, right? Mm. That the only time that I was doing nothing were times when I otherwise should be going to bed or relaxing in the shower or stuff like that. So I started blocking off, you know, times to actually do nothing, just walk around, maybe get some exercise in, maybe some meditation, something to just kind of process all the days.
The creative, you know,
stimulation.
Time. The creative time. Yeah. But, and again, though, to that point, you're being proactive about your time. You know, I've got a joke that I tell. It's not even funny, but I still tell it. Time management is a lot like brushing your dog. You're never really done. Do you have a dog, Phil?
I do. Yep. Yeah. German Shepherd.
Jepper or Shepherd?
German Shepherd.
Oh, a German Shepherd. Yeah. So you go brush him.
Yeah.
And you think you're all done. The dog loves you. Like, oh, thanks, Dad. Yeah. And then you get up, go get a glass of water. You've been brushing the dog for 10 minutes. The dog brushes up against your leg and you look down and there's more hair on your jeans. You're like, I just brushed you. But it's the same with time management. We're never done. And as long as I go into it with that attitude that I'm always managing my time, then I'm going to be ahead of things.
Yeah. Couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. I'd say time management and money management. If you don't tell them where to go, they'll find a place to go.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely. So you talked about one of your successful moments, you know, eating that steak, excited about the big sale, you signed it. Most successful people had one or two moments where they faced a huge barrier that normally could have stopped them. Can you share a significant challenge you faced in your entrepreneurship journey and how you overcame it?
Yeah. So there's so many directions I could go because it's always easy to talk about the successes, right? Those are all the fancy things. But I'll tell you, one of the things that happened is after I sold that large company, I went and I started with a partner, a global business coaching franchise, along with somebody named Brian Tracy, who's a really well-known author. And when we bought it, he had 6 franchisees. By the time I sold it, we had over 230 franchisees all around the world doing business coaching. And one day we got a call from 4 large franchisees that said, hey, we want to meet with you. And that's usually a bad sign for a franchisor because usually no good comes of that. So we're sitting in the conference room and this is the days of the StarTech, you know, that triangle shaped gray phone with all the buttons on it. There was no video conferencing back then. And they said, hey, you know what? We'd actually we like what you're doing. We want to be a bigger part of it. We want to invest. And my partner and I, you put it on mute and we're like, oh my God, they want to invest. But we weren't ready for it. We weren't at that point where we were stable enough. So anyways, all that happens. I go home for dinner and I'm just sitting at the dinner table like a normal night. One of the things we do is we eat dinner as a family. So I'm sitting here. My wife is kind of on my right. My son is next to her and my daughter's on the other side. And my wife just says, hey, Dom, what happened at work today? I'm like, well, the craziest thing. 4 of our most impressive franchisees wanted to buy into the company. And she said, oh my God, are you going to sell it? I'm like, no, we're not ready to be sold. And then like a dummy, I launched into my normal speech, which I didn't realize I'd been doing for years. I said, hon, I've got to go down to San Diego again next week. What I'm going to do though, is I'll leave Sunday night after the kids are in bed. And then I'll come back on Friday. So it's like I was never gone. And what I didn't realize, and maybe had missed a thousand times before, is my son was sitting there next to my wife, and he didn't say anything, but he shrunk in his skin by about 2 sizes.
Yeah.
You want to talk about a failure? That was the moment I realized I'd been failing for a long time. And so I ended up selling the company because of that. I walked in the next day to my partner and I said, I'm actually gonna sell. We need to unwind this. And that took 2 long and painful years, but I could not be happier.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Sometimes we tell ourselves things. We're selling ourselves on an idea or a thing. And it takes those gut check moments to be like, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's not right. No, that's I don't want to be that dad that travels. You want to know how bad it was, Phil? I was traveling so much that I got invited to the birthday party of the concierge at the hotel. That's only good on a TV show.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But when you're living it, when you're a regular at the Phoenix Airport Terminal 2 restaurant.
Yep.
Yeah. That's not for me.
Yeah. No, I had a similar thing. I had left the corporate world because I was traveling too much, living out of hotels, barely seeing my kids. Then I built a company and I built it up to be successful enough that I was traveling, living out of hotels again. And it's like, same thing. What am I doing?
What am I doing? Yeah. It's that gut check. I'm sorry that you went through it, but I'm glad that you recognize it's such a painful recognition that what have I become?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, but then having the courage to change.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes to priorities, you know, and I found that the people that are incredibly successful usually have a good, solid North Star. And that North Star is not money. It's values.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
So you talked a little bit about obviously the old school phone. And I want to talk about times have changed a little bit. And what worked 10 to 15 years ago doesn't necessarily work today. You know, the business landscape, it's ever evolving.
Right.
How do you stay current with industry trends and ensure your business adapts accordingly?
You know, I firmly believe, and I've always believed, that I need to hire good people and listen to them and let them do their job. So as an example, I'm never going to be a search engine optimization or an SGE specialist, right? Search generative experience on Google. I'm never going to be an expert at that. But I'm an expert at finding people and putting teams together. So I'm going to find somebody who's an expert at that. And then I'm going to give them KPIs and I'm going to build a great culture around them. You know, I'm going to build some place for them to be comfortable and happy so they are happy helping me. I'm never going to be the tech expert. I have a degree in archaeology. I was never set out to be a tech guy. So I'm never going to be that person. It's the same with my finances. I just have to have checks and balances in place to make sure that those finances are getting done the way we want. We're tracking the important numbers and there's feedback loops.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the most rewarding things with being an entrepreneur is when you can take things that you're not great at or have.
I'm not good at anything.
Suck the life out of you and hand them
off. Yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah.
Other people. Absolutely.
Yeah. For sure.
So I want to talk about your TED talk.
Oh, so sure.
You discussed using business tools in family dynamics. Can you elaborate on that experience and its outcomes?
Yeah. So, I mean, it started in the craziest way. About 2 days after my daughter got her cell phone, her life went into a spiral. You know, she was walking around the house moping and things weren't good. And, you know, I didn't know that it was related to her getting a cell phone. But what happened was, I mean, I guess it's called cyberbullying. There was some chat. And by the way, my daughter was going to a private Catholic school at the time. This is not what you think happens in a private Catholic school. But the girls were sniping at each other really hard. And my daughter stepped in to defend her friend. And as soon as she did that, the girl who was doing all the chirping turned on her. And it became really, really difficult and painful to the point that the other girl realized that she was wrong and said, well, maybe I'll just end things. And I'm not kidding. It was a tough conversation. And so we then tried to contact the parents and say, hey, your daughter's in real trouble here. You know, you need to know. But they weren't returning our phone call. We'd call them all weekend. And finally, my wife talked to her at the mom at the schoolyard. And so I didn't think that was going to be a TED talk, but I knew that we had to do something as a family this was a really traumatic thing in our house. And so I don't know what to do, but I do know how to do strategic plans and I do know how to do goal setting. So I just relied on what I knew. And we ended up building vision boards and just talking about what the future could look like. And it was just a great, it was arts and crafts. The kids, all the kids saw was arts and crafts, but what we got them to do was talk about the future and set their goals. And that's really what the TED Talk was about.
Yeah. No, that's incredible. Yeah. Matter of fact, I just got a notification from my son's school about kids getting on there and threatening, you know, things on social media and all that craziness. And
they don't know. They just don't know when they're young. You know,
such a different age than when we grew up. We didn't have any of that stuff, you know.
Can I tell you something funny about social media? This, because, you know, we're all navigating the social media landscape. I'm supposed to be a social media guy, so are you, but I'm not. But I was trying to explain to my son that whatever you put on the internet stays on the internet forever. I said, so if you say to the internet that you don't like spinach or broccoli, that doesn't sound like a big deal. But one day when you go try to get a job at a grocery store, the manager is going to look at that and he's going to say, well, you don't like vegetables and we sell vegetables, right? And without missing a beat, my son said, well, I'm going to tell the internet I like the Avengers, because then one day I might get to be an Avenger. And I was like,
Mark, yeah, okay, yeah.
Oh, hey, that's pretty cool. But I hope you got the point from that, right? Yeah. You know, how do you tell a little kid that what they post lasts forever and everybody out there doesn't have great intentions? And that really comes down to parenting and trying to think ahead. And I don't know if we're doing it right. We'll find out later, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy what's going on. And, you know, and with AI and who knows what's reality out there. I mean, it's just going to get crazier and crazier as we right. progress. So,
yeah, you just gave me cold chills.
Yeah. With the AI. Well, I mean, they're making videos and stuff and you don't even know what's real at this
right.
point.
I have to watch their lips to see if their lips line up with the language. And then at the same time, I know that it'll take about 6 months. And I won't be able to tell it all.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it used to be the hands, right? We look at the AI images and see, and they messed up the fingers on it and stuff.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, they got that now. They figured that out. So they're
advancing
at it. So it gets tougher and tougher. But yeah, let's talk about your podcast. So what inspired you to start the Cabinet Maker Profit System podcast?
Well, the domain name that I really wanted was Left-Handed Vegan Cabinet Maker Profit System, but it was taken. So I took the shorter. I'm joking. I mathed my way back into it. I've been a business coach as of today, as we're talking right now, it'll be 25 years when New Year's rolls over that I've been a business coach. And when I look back on who my first clients were and where I got some great success, it was with woodworkers. And I've always been in the trades. I love the trades. You know, I like working with my hands. But I took the business path, right? And my first two clients, and I can never remember the order now because it was a long time ago, but one of them made coffins, right? Caskets. And the other one made pool tables. And so when I look back on that, when I wanted to reinvent myself after selling the franchise, I went and looked at the data. And I don't know how you find things, Phil, but the numbers don't lie. I just go look at the numbers and I pull them apart and try to find the patterns in the data that'll help me make a good decision. And so I found that something I loved, which is working with woodworkers, was an underrepresented market. And so I went and started Cabinet Maker Profit System as a podcast, because part of being a business coach and running that global franchise, you're a public speaker, you're out there in front of people. And I love that, but I didn't want to get on airplanes anymore. So I answered the question for myself, how do I publicly present without having to get on an airplane? And so podcasts and YouTube videos became the choice.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's interesting too, because most people, when they get into a business endeavor, they try to go wide. They try to cast a broad net, you know, and I've always been of the mindset, I would rather be an inch wide, mile deep than a mile wide, inch deep, right? I want to be hyper specialized, the best in that category.
Yeah. A big fish in a very small pond.
Yeah. And it helps with, you talked about SEO earlier. It helps with that because you're not competing with everyone on the internet.
Yeah.
You're very localized. It's a lot easier to become the top cabinet maker podcast than podcast, right?
Right. Right. And we've then branched out. Once we found that there was heat there, that, you know, people were listening, people were getting value. What I started to get was a lot of renovators and home builders, because kitchen cabinets and millwork packages are such a big part of their expense. They were listening to the show. Uniquely, my show is about the business of the contracting business. And so they started to tune in, and then they started to ask questions, and I couldn't answer them on Cabinet Maker. So I think I'm wearing the hat today. So I started the Profit Tool Belt show. So I've got two podcasts both speaking to the construction and contracting market, and both specifically around the business of the construction business.
Absolutely. And honestly, that's the best way to go about a business. If you're starting off, hyper specialization and then expand as your need dictates.
That's right. Yeah. Where the data tells you to go.
Yeah. So how do you approach goal setting, both personally and professionally?
Oh, you know, I don't know how you do it, Phil, but I've changed my methods of goal setting again and again over time. Cause I find that I like to change it up. I mentioned before that my business partner was Brian Tracy for a long time. And I mean, he's one of the kings of goal setting. So I learned a lot of different strategies from him. But I think it really comes down to something you said before, which is I have to understand what's important to me, my values, what I want to accomplish. And then I write them down. Again, I'm a big fan of writing things. I have all the softwares. I have all the stuff. Don't get me wrong. I'm not doing everything on paper, but I like to write. I like to scribble things down and just stick to those key top level things that'll get me where I want to be. Can I share my very first affirmation? I write it every single day and it's always my first affirmation.
Love to hear it.
Okay. Mine is, I am here to change the world.
It's awesome.
I don't know how I'm going to do it. And one of my really good friends said to me once, he goes, why? What's wrong with it? which I thought was a good point. But it, what I find and what it does to me is it puts the, it points the finger back at me and says, how are you going to add so much value to the world that you get the overspray? Like, how can I throw so much value so hard and so fast to the world that whatever comes back to me is that fine mist, and that fine mist will take care of me and my kids, me and my wife and kids, right? That's what I want.
Well, and I'd say it extends beyond just some of your business endeavors. It's being a good human, right? It's your interactions with people,
right?
If you're going to make the world better, if you're going to change it, if you're going to improve it, it's not just in the business interactions, it's in your entire life, right?
Yeah.
It's a grand endeavor. And that kind of defines who you are as a person beyond just the entrepreneur, business coach, podcast host, and all those things. Adventures.
Now, we're going live right now, Phil, so everybody knows what time of year it is. Hopefully they listen to this episode in the future. But we just had this conversation with, I've got three coaches that are on my team. And so one of their clients was wrapping their head around the fact that they're in growth mode and they thought they should have done better, but their payroll last year was $500,000, which is pretty good, right? It's a pretty good payroll, but he was like blowing past it. I'm like, can we hang on for a second? In your city, you just put $500,000, you put $500,000 back into the economy through all of your hard work. And he's like, yeah, I know, but you know, we could have done better. And I'm like, just hang on a second. You put turkeys on the table at Thanksgiving a few weeks ago. And there's going to be Christmas gifts under the tree in a few days because of all of this that you've done by giving people jobs with security and paying salaries that they had the confidence to go out and buy gifts for their kids. So please don't blow past the fact that you've got $500,000 in salary and you think it should be more. Dude, you just put $500,000 into your local economy. It's a big deal.
Absolutely. No, it's incredible. Something that I think a lot of us entrepreneurs are kind of geared towards is problem solving, right?
Yeah.
And so you're focused on a lot of times like the next problem and
right. things and you like forget that. To celebrate
and have the gratitude. Yeah. So I do a daily or nightly actually gratitude journal before I go to bed and force myself to spend time actually writing down what I'm grateful for. And it's an app now on my phone. So I go through and plug it in every night, but I think it's important. Because you forget those things. You look back and
I forget. That's a great idea, Phil. That's a really good idea. I don't do that at all, and I should. Yeah.
It's like 5 years ago, you looking at you now, what would they say about your life and who you are and things like that? And it's easy to miss those things, you know, those incredible things. So I try to take time before I go to bed to actually go through and think about the things that I'm grateful for.
Yeah. Gosh. If I look back at my younger self, I'm grateful that I picked the right girl first. Because and some people, they've already made that decision and they might be questioning it. That's your deal. But for me, I picked the right girl and we've got a great family for it. Yeah. I wonder what my gratitudes would be. It has to start there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you talked a little bit about relying on amazing people that work for you, right? Your team and that. How do you foster innovation within your teams?
I think it's constant. So one of the things that I tell people is that's your decision. Like, come to me with your decisions. You know, come to me. Here's the goal. Here's what we're trying to get to. Tell me how we're going to get there. And so I want them to come to me with ideas. Sometimes I've got my way of doing things, but I try to reiterate as much as I can. This is my way of doing it, and we're going to change as we go. And so the best thing I can say is my team knows that I'm open to change, and I constantly remind them that I'm looking for better ideas than the ones we have in front of us now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I probably have to keep working at that one, because sometimes I just want things done and I forget that there's a better way to do it, but I don't know how to do everything.
Yeah.
You know,
that was a tough thing for me to do as well, is some of that step back, right? I always wanted to be like the hands-on and involved with it. And
how do you do it? How do you get innovation out of your team?
Yeah. A few things. The first one is fostering trust. Trust for me, I think, between the employee and their leadership is very important. And I will tell my employees, and even the ones listening to this could tell you, what's the one thing that'll get you fired? There's only one.
Break your trust?
Lying. Yeah. Breaking my trust. Yeah. That's really it. We've had people make some very expensive mistakes, but it's all part of learning. It's all part of figuring it out. They owned up to it. They lived up to it. And I think when you have that level of trust that you know that your leadership has your back, even when you're making mistakes, then you're good. And then we reward the innovation and you know, we're excited around not only the wins, but the failures. You know, we're excited around treating it like it's all like playing a video game, right?
Yeah.
When you figure something out or do something stupid, you found out a way not to do it. We celebrate it. It's exciting. So I really think it starts with that level of trust inside your company. And there's times where you almost
shake your head
that minute and be like, let me get back to you tomorrow. We'll talk more about this. It kind of smooth out the emotions a little bit, but at the end of the day, you're going to move on. You're going to make more money. You're going to grow your business. And you're going to see a lot more growth out of trusting
your people. Absolutely. I can't micromanage. I learned, you know, and I used to be that guy, you know, but one of my earliest companies, I installed Christmas lights on houses, and then I was a painter, and that, you know, you sort of evolve through the trades. And I just remember telling like, you got to hold the brush in your right hand. This is how many ladder moves I expect on this side of the house. And like, and I thought I was being a great, you know, leader. Oh my gosh, I would have quit. I would have thrown the paint at me. Right.
Yeah.
At the same time, I know why I pre-plan my ladder moves, because I think about efficiency.
Yeah.
And other people don't. They're there to do a job, right? But I could have done it differently. I could, if I was watching myself now, I'd be like, son, let's go for a walk. You know, like, this is not gonna be how you lead a great team. Yeah, you gotta trust them.
I blame it on movies, because we got a lot of our ideas of what a boss should be from like movies and TV and stuff.
Yeah.
But in this day and age, it's not a reality.
It's not. When that large company, the first one I talked about that I grew and sold, that, you know, I had a call center of 120 people there, 120 seat call center. And so we had a bunch of sub managers and leaders of different departments and divisions. And there was I'll call it a kerfuffle. Somebody was crying. They came into my office. I had to talk to her supervisor and find out what happened. And the doors closed. I'm like, buddy, what happened? And, you know, why did you say this? And why did you do that? And he goes, this is the craziest thing. He goes, I don't know. I heard it on 30 Rock. do you remember that TV show?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, like you're quoting Alec Baldwin in The Office? No, that's not, not the way we're going to manage. But he didn't know. He was a kid too, right? So now I can look back on it and go, okay, well, I didn't do enough leadership training for my team, but he was doing the best he could. He just took his advice from 30 Rock. I'm like, oh no.
It's a comedy, bud. It's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's not real life. Yeah.
It's not real life.
Yeah. I think about the same thing with some of the sales movies and stuff, Coffees for Closers and all that kind of stuff, you know, and it's amazing what you can pick up from fictional movies and TV shows.
Right.
But, yeah. Well, Dominic, I want to thank you for your time today. For our audience listening, where can they connect and follow you online and learn more about your work?
Well, thank you for that. And I appreciate being here with your audience. And look, if you can't find me, you're really not looking, because, you know, in this day and age, if you could spell my name, Dominic Rubino, then you can find me. If you find another Dominic Rubino that's a college level wrestler, that's not me. That's another kid. But you can also find me at this podcast called Profit Tool Belt, or, you know, if you're in the trade, Cabinet Maker Profit System. And great ways to find me. I've also got a book called Construction Millionaire Secrets, which you can get on Amazon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dominic, for your time and sharing your lessons in both business and personal. Appreciate your time today.
Yeah, I've appreciated it, Phil. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. And always remember, success is what you make it. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.